Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We're going to go from the rude New Yorker stereotype to the ugly American stereotype here in just a minute with Wendy Perrin from Condé Nast Traveler. We talked about rude New Yorkers last hour and the reputation, deserved or not. And if there's any country in need of image rehabilitation, deserved or not, it is the U.S. right now. In a recent BBC World Service poll, only 35% of the people polled in about 36 countries viewed America favorably. 35%. India, China, Brazil, all of Europe, they all ranked higher than us. But there is some good news. We beat out North Korea, which only had a 23% approval rating. But wait, before you lay blame elsewhere, take a look in the mirror or leaf through your old vacation pictures. Was that you wearing ripped jeans and sneakers at a cathedral in Europe or ordering your meal loudly and repeatedly in English in hopes that if you spoke slowly enough, the waiter would understand? Oh, and here's a newsflash. The rest of the world doesn't share our fascination with ketchup. Or when you're buying something, asking, how much is this in real money? Yes, as French Foreign Minister Bernard Kouchner said earlier this year, when it comes to the U.S.'s battered image abroad,
je pense que la magie est terminée.
I think that the magic is over, he said. But help is on the way, my friends. You can be part of a solution. Here now to help you avoid becoming an ugly American in the eyes of the people where you travel is Condé Nast Traveler's consumer news editor, Wendy Perrin. She's been joining us every Thursday this month for our Unraveling Traveling series. And hi, Wendy. Welcome back.
Hi. It's great to be back. Thanks.
How bad is it, really? I mean, that BBC World Service poll is a little disturbing. Is the ugly American traveler a cliche, or is it alive and well?
Well, you know, I wonder how much of it is that the Europeans and the rest of the world don't like the American government, the administration, versus not liking the actual American travelers. I mean, as I travel around the world, there are a lot of people who really like the Americans that they meet there. They just don't like the administration, you know, but they don't hold that against us, which is a great thing.
But this so-called ugly American stereotype predates the Bush administration.
Well, yes, that's true. And I think it comes from, unfortunately, I think the worst thing is when people arrive, when Americans aren't dressed really the right way. I mean, they tend to wear skimpy clothing sometimes in countries where you really need to show respect for the local people and the local culture by covering up your body. Shorts and sleeveless shirts are just not appropriate. And so I think, you know, one piece of advice I'd give to Americans traveling abroad is just to make sure you're kind of clothed to the extent that the local people are.
We think it's our right as Americans to just be as comfortable as we would be in our own backyards. Right. If our vacation was just, you know,
that
to
might
Jones
be except
Beach.
But we're not in our own backyard. And so I think we need to show, you know, there are local customs. And I think you need to educate yourself as to the local etiquette and make sure that you're not offending anybody.
We are opening the phones for Wendy Perrin in our Unraveling Traveling series on this question of what to do to make a good impression, if you care. And you can call up and say you don't care. But when you travel abroad, do you consider yourself kind of an ambassador from the United States? And if so, we're going to talk about, Wendy has a lot of tips on how to really be an ambassador for the United States as you travel abroad to have fun on your vacation. Call us and talk about this topic at 212-433-WNYC. You can ask for Wendy's tips. You can give your own tips. You can question the premise, 212-433-9692, or comment on our webpage. I know people are going to have a lot to say there at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Where do you start? Where do you start? Well, you did start with travel. With clothing, not to offend people with your clothing. How about something else?
Well, you know, I think in a lot of, not only in Muslim countries, but in a lot of developing countries, you see a lot of Americans coming through And yes, they're very noticeable because they tend to be quite loud and take up a lot of space, you know. But then they also tend to throw money at problems, which is not a good thing in the long term for anybody involved. For instance, if somebody's kind of, you know, if it looks like somebody's needy, they'll be handing out dollar bills here and there. And of course, that just leads to moms keeping the, in developing countries, moms keeping their kids home from school to go out and beg instead of going to school because they think they'll be able to make more money that way. You know, a lot Americans tip a lot, but they also tend to, they feel guilty if they see somebody in need. Mm-hmm. So they tend to kind of throw around dollar bills. And first of all, it's not a good idea to throw around dollars. You should be throwing around the local currency if you're throwing around anything. But then also realize that the equivalent of a dollar, it may be way too much in a particular situation, and it's better to give just a much smaller amount. Otherwise, you're encouraging all kinds of people to beg.
Huh, that's a dilemma, and I think that's a social awkwardness, a source of social awkwardness that a lot of travelers don't know exactly how to handle, don't know what the right thing to do is. I know you've written in an article that on a few occasions you've handed a coin even or a cookie to one lone, desperate-looking child, and then you were swarmed by 20 more kids who seemed to appear out of nowhere, even trampling one another to grab the next coin or cookie, and in spite of your good intentions, you had caused a problem.
Exactly. Exactly. So it becomes very tricky to know. It's really hard to know whether you should be giving at all or if so, what. These days, so in general, it's not a good idea to give cash. Cash handouts. You know, when I'm traveling to a developing country, I tend to take little gifts like maybe pens or pencils for the local children. And then maybe I'll give a pack of pens to the school teacher and then leave it to the school teacher to divide them equally among the children, because otherwise, you know, you arrive with a pack of pens and all the kids are grabbing them and suddenly some have them and some don't.
Lucille in Hazlitt, you're on WNYC. Hello, Lucille.
Hi. My husband and I have traveled to Paris a few times. And by the way, Parisians are very friendly. We found the French to be very friendly to Americans. But we always try to find out what the local customs are and try to speak a little French, so we're ordering in French, even if it isn't very good. And they always seem to appreciate that. But, you know, we took a bike tour one the last time we were there. And it was given by, a tour of Paris on bicycles, a lot of people from America and from overseas, a lot of different tourists. And the tour guide sort of making comments about, you know, the French people and, like, how the men are so greasy. And I was like, that is, like, it really turned us off. It's like, what kind of impression is he, this tour guide, making on all these mm-hmm. other travelers about Americans?
Like, that's interesting. And, Lucille, I'm going to leave it there, but I think she brings up a really crucial topic, which is the language, that even attempting to speak anybody else's language, having a few words, shows that we're not so arrogant as to not reach out.
Absolutely. Always learn at least how to say hello or good day and please and thank you in the local language.
Although I have to say that I had the experience, the one time that I was in Paris, of trying to do that with my halting, you know, high school French, to talk to a ticket agent at the railroad station. And I was really trying to do it in French and struggling, and he did not give me one inch. He sneered at me the whole time.
Really? See, I found in Paris they just start speaking to me in English. I found that in Italy, too. I'll try to speak the local language, but they all speak English. So.
Right, and then they laugh at you because they tend to speak everything, and we tend to just speak English.
Right.
How about, let's see, Paul in Wyckoff. You're on WNYC. Hi, Paul.
Yes, hi, good morning. First-time caller. I just came back from Europe on Monday of this week, and in particular Ireland. I found the people there to be very engaging, very warm, and most of the questions were more about the current administration and points of view that they have about the president and the vice president. Very interested in Obama and Hillary. Could Obama really make a difference? And they seem to separate Americans from the foreign policy of the United States. So my experience, along with my wife, was very, very positive. Gaelic, a little bit harder to speak than French or Italian, but even when we've been in other countries recently over the last couple of years and attempted the language, I think they love hearing Americans speak their language. The only problem is you got to be able to understand them once you start.
Paul, thank you. Wendy?
Yeah, I've found the same thing. I've found that people in foreign countries really differentiate among the American traveler, you know, the individual American person, and the America's foreign policy and the administration. And that they are still just as warm and welcoming and really want to talk to Americans.
We will continue in a minute with Wendy Perrin, consumer news editor for Condé Nast Traveler. We have a lot more calls that we'll take on this question of being an ambassador for the United States when you travel abroad. We're also going to do a part two with Wendy later in the hour, taking a staycation instead of a vacation, what to do and how to have fun by not going away. That's a good tip, you know. On the day after oil hit $130 a barrel, and the airlines started charging for the first bag.
Right, $15.
Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about being an ambassador. We'll talk about the staycation when we continue with Wendy Perrin. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we continue with Wendy Perrin, consumer news editor for Condé Nast Traveler, who, as you may know, is joining us every Thursday this month for our Unraveling Traveling series. Today's topic, being an ambassador for the United States when you travel abroad. And Wendy, you wanted to talk about photography.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, a lot of Americans are out there traveling with their brand new big digital cameras, clicking away at everything they see. And especially in developing countries, it's important to sort of have the approval of the person you're photographing before you do so. It can be offensive to some people, or it can make them feel like objects. And I think it's important, like, let's say you're in an outdoor food market. You don't want to just be standing there taking photos of everybody. Some people might be shy. It just might be offensive. Also, in places where people really need money, it's often nice if you do want to take a photo of somebody, buy a piece of fruit. You know, give them something in mm-hmm. exchange for what they're giving you.
Do you think that's different than the etiquette for photography that would pertain domestically?
I think it is, because of course it depends on where you are domestically. In big cities, I mean, people are taking photos all the time, and you don't really know if you're in a photo or not. But just in a lot of countries where the people can either feel objectified, or it's against their religion or just local customs. You know what I often do? I think it's really nice to take a photo if you happen to have a Polaroid camera, or if you can show them, if you have a digital camera and you can show them the photo that you just took. They love that. A lot of these people have never even seen, they may not own a photo of themselves, or they may not have seen themselves in a picture frame, and they really love it. Again, it's something you can give back to them in exchange for what they've given you.
David in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, David. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Wendy. I just want to congratulate you. This is a great show.
Thanks.
I'm a meditation teacher, and I lead groups of people, mostly Americans, to India for sort of meditation retreat, sacred tour, you know, like tours of sacred India. And I do an extensive orientation for them here before we even go about cultural orientation. And the four main things that we cover are, it's what I call the big American splash, trying to avoid that. And what it is it's clothing, it's voice tone, it's how we throw our money around, and photography, like she just said. It's something that when they follow that, especially in a place like India in particular, where culture is such an important thing to Indians, we just get an entirely different experience of India than otherwise people would get.
David, what was your third one?
The third one was a tone? Oh, yeah, voice tone.
What do you mean voice tone?
Voice tone, in other words, you know, if there's a group of people, I keep my groups really small too, so that helps. But say if there's a group of four Americans walking down a sidewalk, all having a conversation with each other in English in a full voice tone, it really stands out. And so what I try to do is I try to just have them be mindful and not talk in a really loud voice.
Wendy, is this ringing a bell for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Americans tend to be noisy. They tend to speak in a loud voice and also to just kind of take up a lot of space. In countries where people are used to taking, you know, most people take up a much smaller amount of space. And so they're just very noticeable. You know, often you'll find a big group of Americans kind of laughing or yelling at each other or slapping each other on the back. And sometimes it's just not appropriate.
David, thank you. And that's David in Manhattan's tip. David on Staten Island wants to question the premise of this conversation. Hi, David.
Hi. Well, with regard to American government foreign policy, I and probably most other Americans would probably find the government behavior in the majority of countries in the world despicable. Does that mean that we should discuss that when deciding how we treat tourists who come here from these countries, including, for example, China? No, of course not. It's never brought up at all. We do our best to be helpful and do the best we can to give them a good visit to the United States. What kind of double standard is it that people would come when we come there and be somehow negative because of our government? And by the way, should we debate it with them if they bring it up?
It's a fair question. What about a double standard?
But see, that's why I think it's so important to treat each person, each traveler individually. I mean, you're right. When people come here from China or another government that we don't always agree with, we should treat each individual on a case-by-case basis. You know, and that's why I think it's so important to try to connect on that individual human level, to have that kind of interaction and connection with individuals in the country you're visiting, rather than stereotyping them in any way.
Well, should it be a goal of traveling, and David, thank you for raising that, to not offend? Does that squash an exhilarating experience, travel, into a tepid one out of too much self-consciousness?
No. But see, I see it as the opposite. I see it as if you're respecting the local customs and if you're traveling with sort of the right etiquette and blending in to the extent that you can, that's how you have a much more authentic experience, because you're getting to know, here's the local culture. You're getting in touch with, here's how they live, and you're having more human interactions with more individual people. And that's how you learn and how you have those authentic connections.
Ben in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Oh. Hi, Ben.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Oh, thanks for I love this topic. Hey, listen, I've actually been traveling, especially like with the military, for like over 12, 15 years. And I think that the ugly American phenomenon is going to stop if the dollar rate continues to be depressed the way it is.
Huh.
Because the biggest problem out of everything you said is the way, like you said, Americans throw their money around. And Americans don't throw their money around as much anymore because they realize that the dollar is not as accepted. Because I went to Germany just a couple months ago, and they wouldn't even take dollars in the bar, which is totally different than in the 90s or early, you know, 2000, 2001, when they would actually ask you for dollars in some cases, as opposed to the euro or even before when it was the Deutschmark. So, and
that's a really good point. What about the respect that you got as a member of the military abroad? Were you seen in a different light than tourists, for better or for worse?
I'm glad you asked that. You know what? Not only are foreigners, well, we're the foreigner, but people in other countries sensitive to the difference between Americans and the American government, but there's something that nobody's mentioned. They are highly sensitive to the difference. I'm an African-American. They are highly sensitive to the difference between an African-American-American and European-American or white American.
Uh-huh.
They literally will ask. I mean, they are in tune more with a lot of your issues, and they feel, I think they have a sensitivity. They think you're oppressed anyway in certain areas, and they identify with
you. Treat you with more respect. Yeah, and identify is an interesting word there. If people feel that the United States is sort of the overlord of the world, Wendy.
Right. I mean, that's interesting because I think that if there is an impression out there that a lot of Americans are kind of arrogant. And I think that does have to do with what you were saying about throwing the money around. You know, Americans in the past have been known to be sort of, they tip a lot. In fact, often they overtip. And so some cultures around the world might think that they might equate that with throwing a lot of money around and kind of showing, look how much I have.
Wendy Perrin with me on WNYC. And Ben, thanks for a great call in our Unraveling Traveling series, talking now about being an ambassador for the United States as you travel abroad. But how about this, Wendy? Let's say you're traveling in a conservative Muslim country. As a woman, do you cover your hair, even though you may personally not follow that custom or even disagree with that custom? Or do you just decide in advance that, you know, if you can't respect the local customs, you just don't go?
Well, that's a tough question. I can tell you from my personal experience, when I was in Syria, which is probably the most sort of hardcore Muslim country I've been to, I did not cover myself. In fact, in Aleppo, Syria, which is about a five-hour drive from Damascus, and it's pretty, you know, they're pretty conservative. In fact, there were very few women. I don't even remember seeing a woman on the street. But I actually didn't. I did not cover myself. I was told by people I trusted there that they really didn't expect Western travelers to Western women to cover themselves up that way if that's not what they're used to doing. But of course, whenever we went to a mosque, of course I would cover my head. And I carried a headscarf with me everywhere just in case I ever felt like it was really the appropriate thing to do.
Now, Mary in Brooklyn wants to follow up on your remarks about photography when you're traveling abroad. Mary, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. So I spent about a year traveling around South America, and I happened to arrive about 2 weeks before the U.S. invaded Iraq. So it was a time when everyone wanted to talk about politics, and I was learning the language, so I was able to do that. And my impression was, you know, pretty much the same. People separate individual Americans from the actions of the government. But one of the things that I think really is universal and is a really easy thing to do, especially if you're willing to just learn a few words in the language, is to bring along pictures of your family and friends at home, because, you know, family is something that a lot of cultures place a high value on. And after talking about politics, that was the topic that they were really interested in. And I think it's just a nice way to sort of present yourself as an individual and humanize the interaction that you might have. It's not hard to learn the words for mother, father, sister, brother.
I couldn't agree more. I have had so many cab drivers where, you know, I've ended up showing them pictures of my kids and they show me pictures of their kids. And it is a wonderful way to establish that human connection. You know, another thing that I do besides talking about family and bringing out family photos is I always bring postcards from home. Because, you know, let's say you find yourself in a school in a developing country or you're in a church. Those are two places where I find it's really a good place to meet other locals. The fact is that they've shared a part of their home with you. And so for you to give them a postcard from your home, it's giving them something back.
That's such a beautiful idea. It never occurred to me to, because, you know, you travel and you get postcards, you gather postcards, to bring postcards. That's such a beautiful idea. Now, you mentioned the church. We have to break in a minute, but Luis in Hoboken wants to talk about visiting churches and other houses of worship as a traveler.
Yes, I do.
Go ahead, real quick.
While last in Spain, I just couldn't believe the questions people were asking of the guide in one of the cathedrals in Spain, where they were dredging up some really sensitive issues regarding Franco and the Spanish Inquisition. I can understand wanting to know the history, but I think as an American, read and learn your history before going and approaching people, because countries like Spain, the Civil War is still fresh in a lot of memories of the older generation.
And with respect to the churches?
In respect to the churches, watch what you say. People are there praying. People, there's regulations about, please don't take flash photography. Please respect that this is a house of worship.
And I guess that would be the same in any house of worship across the world or down the block.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's probably one of the most important places to show respect for the local culture is in a house of worship.
All right. We are going to continue with Wendy Perrin, but turn the page. We're going to go from being an ambassador of the United States as an individual when you travel abroad to, in this era of $130 a barrel oil and airlines now charging for the first bag that you want to check, maybe instead of going away on your vacation, you're going to take a staycation. So we're going to clear the board of callers. Now we want you to call up and tell everybody else the tips, your tips, about what to do if you just stay around this area. Call up with what I did on my staycation. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, with your what I did on my staycation in the New York area calls, and stay with us. Staycation. The New York Times defines the term as a neologism used by those who choose not to travel and prefer to unravel the mysteries of the world from the comfort of their living room couches. But Wendy Perrin, our guest for our Unraveling Traveling series every Thursday in May, consumer news editor for Condé Nast Traveler, I think a staycation is really a lot more than that, because you can travel to all parts of New York City, feel like you're traveling the world, all parts of the metro area, really, and, you know, not have to fly, not have to book hotel rooms, et cetera, et cetera. A staycation can be a lot more than the couch.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I've never taken a staycation. And as much as the couch and a 700-page novel have a lot of appeal to me, I think what I'd probably end up doing is taking my kids into Manhattan on the train every day and just walking around, or maybe seeing where else the train goes to places where you can walk around.
So Mike in Manhattan, I think, did something like that. Hi, Mike. What'd you do?
Hi there. Well, we would have some repairs done on our apartment last year. I live on the top floor of a building at Broadway near Columbia University, and as it turned out, a friend of ours who lives out in Jackson Heights was away for a month. So we lived at 82nd and 35th, which is a couple of blocks from where all of the Indian restaurants are in Jackson Heights.
And I have to keep you short, but you felt like a tourist.
Pardon?
You felt like a tourist in your own city.
We explored the area from the Woodside Long Island Railroad Station out to the junction, and it's everything from Uruguayan and Ecuadorian to Bangladeshi.
Mike, thank you very much. By the way, somebody wrote in, the ultimate staycation is when your husband takes the kids to visit his family for the weekend and you get the apartment to yourself. All right. Jeff in Ridgefield has a key to the staycation. Yes, Jay? Jeff?
The key is, no matter what you do, is to tell people that you've gone away. That's the key. The staycation only works if you don't have phone calls and dinner obligations. Just tell people you're going away.
Thanks, Jeff. And I think Rich in Smithtown didn't do that. Is that right, Rich?
Yeah, the key is total commitment to the staycation as a real vacation. No, you have to turn your mail off, turn off your phone, don't check email. Both husband and wife, spouses, have to commit to a vacation. If one decides to go to work and you stay back, it's all over.
That's right. It's hard to take a staycation if you're in your own home because there are all the chores that are staring you in the face.
Exactly. I'd be cleaning the basement and cleaning the kitchen and exactly. I personally would find it easier to get out of the house, you know, and take the train somewhere.
And turn off the computer, or at least vow that you're not going to check your email or your BlackBerry or, you know, whatever.
Right, exactly. But you pointed out that, you know, we live in or close to a city that has so many different neighborhoods, it's like going to another country. You know, if you go to the Coney Island area and you walk around, you know, there are areas where everything's in Russian, or you go to Astoria, Queens, and everything's in Greek, and you can really take a vacation. You know, it's like you can travel just staying here in this area.
Eric in Brooklyn, what did you do?
Actually, my wife and I could go to Ulster County. It's about an hour upstate, just a bus ride. And suddenly you're near Minnewaska State Park, and there's New Paltz and Woodstock and Gardner. You're in the mountains. You'd never know you were like an hour away from the city.
Right. Who needs to fly to the Rockies when you can go to the Gunks, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And you sleep in your own bed.
Sometimes we sleep in our own bed. We also have friends up there. I went to college up there in the late 80s, so I still have friends that live up there, and we'll stay with them sometimes.
Thank you very much. Wendy, do you know if the idea of a staycation is uniquely American?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. It just seems to me, though, anywhere in the world, we all have there are anybody who lives in or near a big city, there are a lot of things to do at your fingertips that you've probably never even done. You know, things really almost in your own backyard that you've always said, oh, I'd really like to go see that winery down the road, or oh, I've never been to that museum. And that's, you know, a staycation is a great opportunity to do those things.
Rona in Nassau has some staycation tips. Hi, Rona.
Hi, congratulations, Brian. That's great.
Thanks so much. Peabody. Thank you very much.
I think that a vacation has to be like away from home. It doesn't have to be, but it should be. And in that respect, I would say take little train trips or little bus trips or little car trips all around outside of New York City. New York City you can see anytime if you get on a subway. Take a day off and go. There's a gorgeous arboretum at the end of Long Island, and you can go to Montauk Point at the same time. Or go someplace in to Ellis Island if you've never been there. I guess that's right.
Yeah, that's a good one. And, Rona, that's going to have to be the last word, but thank you. Glad you had the last word. And we thank Wendy Perrin, Condé Nast Traveler's consumer news editor. She will be back next Thursday for the final installment of our series, Unraveling Traveling. Have a wonderful holiday weekend.
Great, you too.
And we'll see you next Thursday. And coming up on the Leonard Lopate Show right after the news, Top Chefs Alice Waters, David Boulay, and David Walter take us on a tour of their restaurant kitchens. Jazz singer Cassandra Wilson is here. And on Underreported, why America's last herd of wild buffalo are being targeted for capture. This is WNYC FM and AM New York and WNYC.org. Thanks again for all your pledges during the membership drive. Keep them coming during Leonard. And Leonard comes to you right after the latest news.